Marcus Smart plays defense against the coronavirus, and day two of our deep dive into Celtics history brings us to a time the Celtics really didn't want. Bob Cousy, it's a Wednesday Locked On Celtics. Millie's, let's go. Rainy J's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This is the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global but it got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly. John Corral is here of MassLive.com, thanking you once again for making this podcast part of your daily routine. Super psyched that you continue to do so and continue to make the Locked On Celtics podcast, the number one Boston Celtics podcast on all of the podcasting charts. It's very exciting to see the podcast up there and stay up there, and it's all because of you. And continuing to put out Monday through Friday daily free podcast for you so you can take it with you if you are going somewhere, hopefully staying home, doing something at home, putting it on, you know, maybe you can cast it to your TV, kind of make it a thing that you're watching, whatever it is, I'm glad that you're doing it. We'll start quickly with a bit of news. Marcus Smart, who is cleared of the coronavirus, no longer has it, never had any symptoms, but did test positive. One of a few players who have tested positive. We knew that Rudy Gobert, obviously, he's the guy that started the whole thing, got the league shut down. Donovan Mitchell, we know that Christian Wood of Detroit had it. Everybody cleared for Detroit. For Brooklyn Nets had it, including Kevin Durant. Don't know anything about him, but I'm assuming that he's fine because we haven't heard anything otherwise. And a couple of Lakers had it and have been cleared as well. Marcus Smart is donating blood to go towards this program, this national program that takes the plasma from his blood and will test it, research it, use it as a treatment for people who are still fighting the coronavirus. This treatment, it's primitive, it's a little older, it's whatever you want to call it, but it's shown some promise and it's fast. What they do basically, in a quick scientific explanation, when the coronavirus or any virus passes through your system and you're cured, your body has created these antibodies. It's the same theory behind the flu shot. They give you a tiny dose of it, your body creates the antibodies, and you're kind of immune to it. That's the theory. And so Marcus Smart had coronavirus. He developed the antibodies. Now he's cleared. And now they're going to take the blood with those antibodies and inject it into the most serious patients, and hopefully that triggers that person's body to start making those antibodies and fight the virus. It's shown some promise. I don't know that it's 100% effective, but it's something, and it's fast. It goes from Marcus Smart's body into a patient quicker than anything else they can try, so it's something that he's doing, and got to applaud him for stepping up and, again, as people have said on Twitter, playing defense, again, Marcus Smart style, when you need a big stop, and this time America needs a big stop of the coronavirus, you call on Marcus Smart, and he steps up, and he's going to do it with his own blood. So if this works, you know, I mean, it's amazing. You know, Marcus Smart's going to step up and be like, yeah, I'm going to defend against COVID-19. So shout out to Marcus Smart for doing this. The NBA is working with the national program doing this. Other guys, I'm sure, are going to do this. It's not just going to be Marcus Smart. Anybody that's had it, this is what makes the test, the antibody test, so important. A lot of people, a lot of us have had it. I don't know if I've had it or not. It's possible. I mean, I've been around all of these guys. The last time Marcus Smart spoke in public, I was sitting directly across from him. As I've said before, it's possible that I was infected. It's been more than 2 weeks. I haven't really had any symptoms, but Marcus Smart didn't have any symptoms. I'm a relatively healthy guy. What if I had it? If there's an antibody test out there, and I have it, if I've developed antibodies, then I want to develop, I want to donate my blood too. Like, anybody who has had this and is cured should donate the blood to help fight it. And just keep going back. Put a tap in my arm. Take as much as you can and keep going back for more, because that would be a very important way to help fight this. So it's as important as it is to get a vaccine and the tests to see who has coronavirus, it's almost as important, maybe equally important, to get the antibody tests out there so those people who may have had it can see if they can help fight it. So Marcus Smart doing that. Shouts to Marcus Smart. And now it's time to return to our story of the Boston Celtics. When last we spoke yesterday, day one of our deep dive in the 1950s, we got ourselves up to the 1950 NBA draft, where Red Auerbach, Walter Brown, they're now a team here in Boston running the Boston Celtics. We know that the Celtics at this point have had struggles. Their first 4 years of existence were losing years. And now Red Auerbach is in town, has a history of winning, and is ready to make his first selection in the first ever NBA draft. And they have an opportunity to get Bob Cousy, who we know now is one of the franchise's all-time greats, maybe on the Boston Celtics Mount Rushmore. But they didn't want him. Not only did they not want him, they tried twice to not get him. And there was an important moment in this story between Red Auerbach and Bob Cousy that changes the entire course of Celtics history. If that moment doesn't happen the way it did, the entire course of Celtics history goes sideways. That's coming up next. For now, you and I are stuck at home. Hopefully, you're not out there running around unless you absolutely have to. If you're one of the first responders, if you're one of the frontline people, mad respect to you and your heroes. The rest of us have to stay home, which means you have to find a way to stay in shape at home. And there's a great way to get a great home workout, and you can get into the best shape of your life. It's with Echelon. If you go to echelonfit.com, you can discover their EX1 connected fitness bikes that offer high quality at home cycling experience at less than half the price of a Peloton. Echelon makes beautifully engineered products for everyone, from busy moms and dads, first responders, elite athletes. Whatever your activity level, there's something for you. And with a daily live on-demand studio class right in your home, you'll never have to set foot in a gym. You are going to love it. But if you're not 100% satisfied, Echelon's going to give you your money back. So join hundreds of thousands of men and women who are getting fit with Echelon. Don't pay a ton for Peloton. Buy an Echelon bike today for under $1,000. Go to echelonfit.com/LONBA to learn about their limited time free Apple iPad and complete details of this exclusive offer. Echelon, it's your time. That's echelonfit.com/LONBA. echelonfit.com/LONBA.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Here we are, day two of the Boston Celtics history lesson. It's me, John Corrales, joined by Mike Dinan. We recorded the entire conversation on Monday. Here is part two and the pivotal moment of Red Auerbach and Bob Cousy, a guy they didn't want. Here's the conversation. The 1950 draft, you get Chuck Cooper, but the number one pick, let's explain the drafts back then. There was a thing called the territorial picks. For people who don't know, the way things worked back then. This is the early days of the NBA. They're trying to kind of appeal to the masses and say, look, if a player is playing in a city, then if that city wants that player, regardless of draft position, they can make him the territorial pick.
That was in a large part because of the popularity of college ball. Prior to the NBA, you only had college basketball as what the fans could watch, and college ball became very big. And the NBA, even in its early years, they struggled a little bit with attendance and all. College ball still remained more popular. And a way to appeal to fans and get them to back their local team was to have the territorial selection. And so, as you said, if a player played in New York, let's say went to NYU or in that area, then they would be picked by the Knicks if the Knicks wanted them. And they didn't have to use a draft pick on that person. They just got to say, yes, we claim him as our territorial pick. Will Chamberlain went to school at the University of Kansas, but he was a territorial pick, I think it was 1962, of the Philadelphia team because he had gone to high school in Philadelphia. That's the way they were flexible, because the main thing is they wanted to have let the fans have the players that they knew and who were popular.
So one of the most popular guys in college in 1950 was playing at Holy Cross in Worcester, and his name is Bob Cousy. And if you close your eyes and think historically of the Boston Celtics, inevitably the image of Bob Cousy dribbling up the floor in that, you know, classic black and white footage pops into your mind. But the Celtics did not want Bob Cousy. The first ever NBA draft, the first NBA draft, was actually Boston Celtics pick. They had the top overall pick. And instead of Bob Cousy, instead of using their territorial pick on Bob Cousy, they go with Chuck Scheer. And Red says, this is a great quote about Cous, "I don't give a damn for sentiment. The only thing that counts to me is ability, and Cousy hasn't proven that he's got that ability. I'm not interested in bringing someone in just because he's a local yokel." I mean, we're talking about one of the greatest point guards of all time, Mike. And here's Red going like, nah, no thanks.
Well, that was Red, you know, Red being Red. He was going to do what he was going to do. But like the popularity of Bob Cousy in New England was off the charts. Again, college ball being the most popular thing. Cousy was an icon in New England. He was an All-American. Holy Cross won the NCAA championship with him there. And I think everyone just assumed that the Celtics would go after him, would pick him. And then he would come and everybody would be happy. They could still watch their guy. And it didn't quite work out that way. As you said, they picked Charlie Scheer because Red felt he needed a big man. And Bob Cousy went elsewhere.
In fact, we go back to Tri-Cities, the Tri-Cities mm-hmm. Blackhawks, which had Red. And now, at this point of the story, has Cousy. Now, the Tri-Cities Blackhawks became eventually the Atlanta Hawks. But they're centered now in Moline, Illinois. And Cousy said of the Blackhawks, he got a call. It says, "Congratulations, you're the number one pick of the Tri-Cities Blackhawks." And he says, "My response was something like, what the hell is a Tri-Cities Blackhawk?" So Cous actually has this, like, taxi business, right? He's like a car business going in Worcester.
Yeah.
Like a
capitalizing
school
on his popularity.
So he's sitting there running all of the things you said about Cous And when he's done playing college basketball, he's sitting there saying, like, yeah, I'm just going to run this this car thing in Worcester. And that was it. He was done playing basketball. He's moving on. So Tri-Cities comes along, and he says, all right, well, I'm going to ask for the money, basically, that I would have made. If you're going to have me shut down my car business, my taxi business, then I'm going to need the money to recoup the driving school. It was a driving school, right?
I think so, yes.
Okay, so it was a driving school. So he asks Tri-Cities in 1950 for $10,000. And they're like, nope. So they traded him. And Cousy goes to Chicago, the Chicago Stags. This is where the basketball gods are basically like, all right, look, Boston, we gave him to you on a silver platter and you refused. We sent him to this team that traded him to Chicago, and the Chicago Stags fold. All right, here's your chance. You got him again. Go for it. And they still didn't want him. They actually, if the Celtics had gotten, there's a dispersal draft. Okay.
Yeah.
And the other NBA teams are in on this draft. They're going to pick from the team, the guys who are on the Stags. And if the Celtics were number one, they wouldn't have picked Cousy. They ended up second. So the Knicks go first, and they pick this guy, Max Zaslavsky. And the Celtics went second, and they were like, all right, fine. We'll take Cousy, I guess. It was like the basketball gods were like, look, we're not giving you the number one pick. We're giving you the number two pick. You are getting Cousy whether you like it or not. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. So Cousy comes along, and his relationship with Red is kind of like I said before, Red's not exactly on board with Cousy. Do you have like the early days of Red and Cousy kind of like what do you know of those?
Well, it was an adjustment, of course. I mean, Red didn't want him. Obviously, you said, you know, you told that whole story. But, you know, Cousy was a great player, and Red was going to take advantage of that. And I'm pretty sure that it didn't take him long to realize that he had somebody that was really going to help the team move up. I remember one of the things that they had, like a little bit of a problem was Cousy was a showboat, to use the term from those days, and that wasn't meant as a compliment. You know, he was too flashy for the 50s, behind the back dribbling, between the legs passing, things that we take for granted now, but and that everyone does. But back then, it was unheard of. He was the first to do this kind of thing, and a lot of times his passes didn't end up with the man they were intended for. They ended up in the seats. And Red, I remember reading, just told Cousy, look, I don't care whether you throw the ball behind your back or what. Just make sure the man catches the pass. And that was something that was a common sense solution, I guess, that helped them get along a little better, and obviously made them more effective on the court.
And so he takes Cousy aside and says, would you agree that guys like Ed McCauley and Chuck Cooper are pretty good athletes with quick hands? Cousy says, sure. And then Red says, well, then will you please tell me why they can't catch your passes? How come they're hitting these guys in the head or bouncing off their chest or just missing their fingertips? And Red has the story of this kind of moment between him and Cousy. He confronts Cousy, and now the ball is in Cousy's court. Cousy, like you said before, is the most popular guy in New England, the most popular basketball player in New England. If Cousy decides that he's going to kind of pop off, everybody's going to take his side. The media is going to take his side. The fans are going to take his side. And Auerbach's done. This is a critical moment in Boston Celtics history, this meeting between him and Cousy. And as Auerbach puts it, Cousy he looked at me and said, "What am I doing wrong?" And right there, I knew I had a superstar in my hands. So that decision, all of this stuff that we talk about, this podcast doesn't exist. All of these things, the Reds Army doesn't exist. None of it exists without Cousy in that moment deciding, all right, let me listen to this guy and see what he's got to say. And let me kind of acquiesce a little bit and play team basketball. I mean, Mike, this is a make or break thing for the franchise.
Yeah, and they did it right. They made it.
He's got some good teammates at that point. You've got Ed McCauley, who is really one of the early kind of great scorers, even though back then the shooting percentages weren't great. Ed McCauley was one of the better shooters out there at 46% in his first year with Boston. He led the team in scoring. The Celtics have good players, but they still can't find team success in the overall team success in the early days of the early 50s.
That's right. They, with Auerbach as the coach, they improved, of course, and then they were a little more successful in the playoffs. They had a winning record every year that Red came in. 6 years in a row, though, they made the playoffs and then did not get out of the East. They just didn't have enough to get by the other East teams. The Knicks in particular. The Knicks were pretty good back in those days. And they had guys like Max Zaslavsky, who you mentioned earlier in that dispersal draft. He was the one that went to the Knicks. Harry Gallatin, Dick McGuire. Those are old-timer names that most people today won't know, but all those guys are in the Hall of Fame. And they were too tough for the Celtics back then before the Bill Russell days. And then finally the Celtics played against Syracuse, and they had Dolph Shays, another future Hall of Famer, and they couldn't get by him. So that's why Red knew at that point they had to do something different. They had to get a man who could get the ball for them.
Yes. So here's Red. He's got this team that's got some studs on it. Cousy, McCauley, Frank Ramsey, Charmin. I mean, before we get to that and the arrival of Bill Russell, these are some big time scorers here. And so why the Celtics needed to get a guy like that is because they needed somebody. Red is a fast break coach. Red's contribution to the NBA as far as stylistically is run and gun. Get the ball, get up. The first few years of him in Boston is run, 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 run. Let's get these guys going. If you couldn't run, you couldn't make the Boston Celtics. And that's kind of what fueled their regular season success. I mean, he was the original up-tempo guy. And you can see it like through the course of history, all of the Red Auerbach tree of coaches. Don Nelson was a disciple of Tommy Heinsohn, who was a disciple of Red Auerbach. What did Tommy Heinsohn say all the time? Run. Like that clip of him looking at Walter McCarty. Hey, Walter, run. Run, Walter, run. You know, Nelly Ball running, up tempo, running gun. That all came from Red Auerbach, Mike.
Tommy actually wrote a book that is titled Don't They Ever Stop Running, about his early Celtics teams that he coached. And that's, as you said, every time he's talking about a style of play, that's what he favors, fast break.
So up until this point, we've got Walter Brown. He owns the Garden. he creates the Boston Celtics, names the team after basically the population of the city of Boston. He brings in Red Auerbach, this running gun coach. Red has this come to Jesus moment with his future Hall of Fame point guard, Bob Cousy. And he's got some kind of stallions, some scorers that he can count on to score the ball. But what he can't do is stop the other team, and he can't get the ball for them to do their thing. So that brings us to the arrival of Tommy Heinsohn, Casey Jones, and Bill Russell. We're going to pause the lesson here and pick it up in tomorrow's podcast. This 1956 draft is the most important draft in Boston Celtics history, really, because it gets them, like I said, the three of their cornerstone players. All right. Obviously, you've got Bill Russell. Casey Jones is a very, very important player. And as you'll hear in the discussion in tomorrow, that I contend that he was basically Marcus Smart before Marcus Smart. And you get Tommy Heinsohn, who later on, I think we'll do that one on Friday. You'll hear exactly how important he is to the Celtics as a player. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer as a player. So he brings an element on offense that's almost as impactful as Bill Russell on defense, just because of what it does for the team. And so that discussion goes into tomorrow and Friday. So the Thursday show is going to be the 56 draft, getting those players, a lot of Bill Russell talk, and then we'll continue that into Friday and get into the Tommy Heinsohn talk, and that will finish up the 1950s. So up until this point, you've now heard the Bob Cousy story. You've heard the origins. I hope you're enjoying this podcast enough to continue subscribing. If you haven't subscribed yet, this is going to continue for the duration of the hiatus. We're going to just take this all the way up to present day. And so we will have this deep dive going through the entire story of the Boston Celtics. If you're not a subscriber, please subscribe. If you are, a 5-star rating and a good written review, you know that that's something that we need. That continues to keep this podcast up at the top of the rankings. And, you know, that really helps, because when advertisers scroll down and you see the Boston Celtics podcast, the Locked On Celtics there in the top 25 of all basketball podcasts, one of the top team-specific podcasts in general, never mind the number one Boston Celtics podcast, it's in the top 25 of all of basketball podcasts right now. Better than some of the national shows. It's all you guys. And I really appreciate it, and it's really helpful. So continue to do that and give those 5-star ratings and good written reviews. Also, check out the Locked On NBA podcast. I do the Wednesday Locked On NBA. We talk a lot about the Vegas plan. We talk about the NBA draft, that process that's being delayed, how that's being handled. And we give our shows, me and Jake Madison, we give in our third segment of Locked On NBA the way we would program ESPN during the hiatus, things we want to see on TV. So check out that show as well. You can always tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Locked On NBA. And also check out the new Chad Ford podcast, Chad Ford's Big Board, as well, to get all of your draft needs. It's a great resource here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thanks for listening. Back with more of Celtics history tomorrow.